Hi everyone, I'm Nada Rothbart. I live here in the beautiful town of Sonoma, California, and I love it. My hope with this podcast is to introduce you to what it's like to live and work in Sonoma by sharing the personal experiences of notable personalities from our community. As a global real estate advisor with Engel & Polkers, I am fortunate to assist national and global buyers coming to Sonoma. Welcome to my podcast, Sonoma Voices. Welcome to another episode of Sonoma Voices. Today's guest is Eric Mayer. Eric, I would like you to introduce yourself besides being a very good friend of mine. And tell us first, what did you study and how did you get to what you're doing today?
So today I make biochar, which is an agricultural product made out of, in my case, grapevines, but any woody material, and we turn it into charcoal and mix it back into the soil, where it serves as long-term habitat for the microbes that make soil a living organism. It's also a form of carbon capture because all the carbon that was in the grapevines or other woody waste remains as charcoal. And charcoal is a really stable form of carbon, so it stays in the soil for thousands of years.
Eric, so, what did you study? What's your background and how did you arrive to this point?
Sure.
In that.
I mean, my life path has been full of turns. I studied, most recently I was a PhD student at Stanford and I was studying environmental engineering, but more specifically oceanography and helping improve ocean simulations so that they could interact with the atmospheric simulations and we'd have a better prediction of how the environment is changing because of human intervention, climate change. That was really fun, really fascinating, but it was really indoors. I was improving a computer code to simulate a very specific type of phenomenon at the bottom of the ocean. And I wasn't really touching the ground very much. So even though I felt like I was helping our understanding of the world today and how the environment is changing, I didn't feel like I was having a very real impact on it.
You were studying the ocean from the indoors.
That's right. Studying it from the basement of the Y2E2 building at Stanford. My laboratory, unlike most, actually had a window. So I wasn't completely sealed in. I speak of it. I had an awesome time there. I really enjoyed everything about it. And also the work-life balance and living in Palo Alto and proximity to the ocean and all of that. You know, now I get to live in Sonoma with many of the same benefits, and my work has me outside. I finished my PhD right as COVID hit, which meant that the world was kind of open to, it was closed. The world was closed, but it was also open to any sort of change you wanted to make in your path. So I took it as an opportunity. My wife, Katie, and I became digital nomads for a while. We traveled around the country, mostly staying with family, but seeing lots of things, trying to figure out how we could, in some way, play into addressing climate change. That took us first to Florida, where we tried to grow microalgae on power plant emissions as a form of carbon capture, which I'll go into just very, very briefly because it points out the fact that photosynthesis is the first step in nature's carbon capture. Carbon's got a bad name right now because we all understand that CO2 is a greenhouse gas and it's causing climate change. But the carbon cycle of carbon being what we're all made of, and then we die and decompose, and it goes up as carbon dioxide, and then it gets sucked back down by plants via photosynthesis, and goes back into life. So microalgae is a tiny, tiny plant. It's maybe the first plant. And it photosynthesizes really, really quickly. So the idea there in Florida was that we would take CO2 emissions from a power plant and feed it to microalgae and grow a ton of algae, pulling the CO2 into that, and then try to do something useful with it. But we ran up against a scaling problem because if we actually absorbed all the CO2 from just one power plant near Orlando, we would be producing more microalgae than the global market for microalgae right now. So we needed to figure out what we were going to do with it if we actually pulled it off. And that's how we learned about biochar. Biochar takes living or recently living stuff that has photosynthesized and turns it into something permanent that won't decompose any further. So if we just left piles of algae out, not only would they decompose and send the carbon back up, but they probably decompose without oxygen kicking in, and you get methane, which is a much worse greenhouse gas. So we'd be making the problem worse if we didn't find a way to solve these piles of algae. So anyway, I learned about biochar, and I really didn't care about algae too much anymore because biochar just seemed like, oh man, I was still just focused on carbon and carbon capture at that point. And I just, this is a form of carbon capture and storage that's already ready. I mean, you'll hear about direct air capture, or I don't know. There are other high-tech ways of capturing CO2, sucking it out of the atmosphere and trying to store it, that all the big tech companies are really interested in. But they're decades out from being viable. Whereas biochar, right now, already 90% of the carbon dioxide removal credits that you can buy to, offset your flight or things like that, are based on biochar. You're paying people to make biochar and then put it in the ground.
I am following so far only because you told me the whole story twice. And I think I am convinced I am so impressed. We need you and Katie and young people like you that are passionate about health of the globe and plants and air and all and the climate. I am so impressed.
Well, thank you. It is very fulfilling. I like doing it, both from a philosophical perspective, but also, so biochar very generally is this carbon-based charcoal product that you can mix into the soil. You can make it all sorts of ways, but the way we make it is also just a lot of fun.
A lot of fun.
My company in particular, Napa Char, we use Napa Char. We use a it's called a flame cap kiln. It was invented by this, well, the one we use was invented by a woman in Oregon named Kelpie Wilson. A flame cap kiln, so I kind of skipped something. The way you make biochar is by heating up any biomass. So in our case, it's grapevines. You heat it up in an environment where oxygen can't get to it. Which means that it physically can't form CO2. There's no O. So the C stays stuck there. It just gets hotter and hotter. It releases a lot of volatile gases. Those volatile gases are flammable. So the flame cap kiln, the way it works is you have all of this wood in basically a pit with a flame across the top, burning off those volatile gases that are released from the heat. Oxygen can't get through the flame, so the wood just stays in there and turns into charcoal. And we just add more and more. But practically, what that looks like is we just get to have these giant bonfires in the vineyard. And we're doing it. Another key component is it produces no smoke. Smoke is flammable, volatile gases. So if you send that smoke through a flame, it burns it all down, and all that is released, most of all that is released thereafter, is CO2.
And Eric, who are your clients? Who is using your biochar?
Vineyards, vineyard managers. Our first big break came from Silver Oak. They hired us to, they were po so vineyards in this area pull out their vines every 30 years or so because they're no longer as productive.
Why do I hear the vines are 150 years old?
Oh, because there are some. There are some, and that's really cool. I don't encourage anyone to pull out their vines so that we can turn them into biochar, but it's for the bottom line, a lot of the vineyards will be ripping out every 30 years or so and replanting. Sometimes it's for more practical reasons like disease. You've got to pull out these vines because they've gotten a disease and they're not making any grapes. Sometimes it's because people's tastes have changed and we need more Cabernet Sauvignon, less Zinfandel. In any case, it's pretty standard practice to rip out your vines with every 30 years or so, which means that on average, something like 3% of the vineyards in our valley here in Sonoma and Napa Valley are being pulled up. And you have to get rid of those old vines somehow. And business as usual has been to burn them to nothing, burn it down to ash. The reason being it's very inexpensive to do. And it's an accepted practice. No one's upset about the smoke that that causes. All other methods of dealing with it are going to be more expensive. So we our niche is we can show up to those burn piles and build our little kiln around them and burn it in a way where half of the carbon remains as biochar. There's no way around it. We end up losing half of the carbon as CO2. You actually need to burn to make the heat to create the conditions for the kiln to produce biochar. But still, so our clients are vineyards who have pulled up their vines and are looking for something more productive to do with their vines than to burn them to nothing.
So do all of them know there's hundreds of vineyards around here, Napa, Sonoma?
Well,
Do
we've
all
only
of
had two
them know?
seasons so far. Word is spreading. I haven't done very much marketing. So far, it's all been word of mouth. And it's time. It's time to start spreading the word a little bit more aggressively. But I mean, it's been so cool to see that this kind of takes on its own momentum. I've tried other startup type company things and tried to force people to get on board with me. And this is the first time where I feel like I'm being pulled into this world.
I can
So
tell
it's
I
really cool.
feel your passion. And Katie's not here. Katie, you mentioned your wife, Katie. Two of you are so adorable, and I'm so happy that you are passionate about what you do and you do things together.
You should see her out there. I mean, she's got so much more stamina than I do for throwing the vines into the kiln. It's amazing.
I know what she does when she's not out there burning vines. So you, Katie, and I met in the yoga class
That's
in
right.
Sonoma.
Sonoma like it hot.
Sonoma like it hot, yes. We all enjoy all kinds of classes they have in Sonoma like it hot. What else are you enjoying in Sonoma? I saw you once in
Oh
Farmer.
gosh. The farmers market, of course, the farmers market. Although, it's been I had a really good practice of going there every Friday up until I this fall I got to help a winemaker with harvest. Napachar, the way we make biochar requires, open burning. So we're only allowed to do it during the window of time in California when you can open burn. So I needed something else to do before November, and I worked with a winemaker, which was so much fun, but it meant that I wasn't able to make it to Friday farmers markets anymore. In any case, I love Friday farmers markets. I love hiking. I'm a surfer and a skier, so I love being able to get to the ocean in an hour and the mountains in three. So I grew up on the East Coast, and every town there has a little square with all the shops set up around it. So when we drove into Sonoma, when we were just kind of looking for where we might move, and I saw the little plaza, and I mean, I really started getting frustrated that we didn't already live here. I was in the car, just like, Katie, come on. So I don't know. It feels really homey to me. I really like it.
That part of your story sounds so familiar. My hometown has a square. And when I drove in Sonoma first time and I saw the square, I just had the feeling I'm at home. I
That's
arrived.
right. Yeah.
There's something about square,
Yeah.
not just in Sonoma, in towns, there's a meeting place.
I think that's right. Yeah. I'd like to believe that if it were an oval or a circle, I'd still like it. I hope I'm not that square, but
No.
I also, so traveling around the country, we got to see the way a lot of people live and hear a lot of people's opinions. And it's so nice to be in a place where I don't have to argue too much about, why what I'm doing is so interesting to me. And I can say that I'm helping with climate change and I don't get any grief for that. Regenerative agriculture and trying to shop local and all of that is it's part of the general philosophy around here in a way that's really refreshing. So I know you're supposed to like expand out of your bubble, but we can only know 150 people. We're evolutionarily capped right around there. So I don't know, I'm kind of into the bubble right now.
You arrived to the ceiling of 150.
I don't know if I'm even there with people I really know, but yeah, I think probably it's Robert Dunbar. It's the Dunbar number. Comes up in all sorts of things. There's camps and military units and companies and all these things you'll find as soon as they rely on coordination over more than 150 people, it breaks down. And so it, naturally, they set up with that sort of cap.
Number.
There are 10,000 of us here in Sonoma, so.
Yeah. What, so you grew up in East Coast and it's quite different here, different in climate and just different. What are your observations? How is different for you?
Well, the first, so the first, we came out to California. So that I could go to Stanford. And that first winter, my birthday is in December, and I didn't believe it was my birthday because the lack of dreary gray days had set up, my internal clock wasn't working correctly. So that was probably the biggest culture, well, not culture, but adjustment I had to make, just that it's going to be, what was it, 70 degrees 2 days ago? That it's going
Yes.
to be really nice out, even in January. I don't know. I think I was always a Californian. I just didn't know it. So there wasn't too much else to get used to. Surfing, I had to get used to crowds. Before coming out here, we'd been in Chicago for 8 years because that's where both Katie and I went to undergrad. And I actually learned to surf on Lake Michigan, which is pretty unusual. There are only maybe 100 or so folks surfing there. So, anytime I saw someone out in the lineup, I was excited. That meant that if I got hurt, someone would notice. And coming out to California and paddling out into the lineup, you suddenly have to really learn how to not get in someone's way on a wave and not get dropped into and things like that. But that's fine. I figured it out. And Sonoma's beaches aren't nearly as crowded as Santa Cruz.
You're absolutely right. They are not. Well, I am so happy you chose to be here in Sonoma. I'm happy finding you found your passion, I can tell, and working on something that it can be called as your purpose. You know about blue zones, people that live 100 or over 100 years old.
Right.
One of the things, and I listened to several TED Talks about longevity. At my age, I'm super interested in what to do to live
I
longer,
don't know what you're talking about.
not just longer, more quality life.
Right.
One TED Talk, she says it's not exercise, it's not the food. It's the connections you have with people. And we for sure have this in Sonoma.
Yeah, I'm feeling that.
Just walking down the bike path, every person coming my way, I don't know everyone, but everyone is saying, "Hi, have a good day." And
That's
just,
right.
right?
Yeah,
Not.
I felt it immediately. You know, it's one of the first things Katie and I said to each other when we moved here is I mean, this isn't an issue, but we have to be nice to everyone because because A, it's small enough, you're going to see everyone again. And B, everyone is so nice. Just if you're in a bad mood, go for a walk. People will cheer you up.
Yeah. Well, such a good thing to chat with you today and hear a little bit more about what you do. It's so unusual to the rest of
Do you
us.
garden, Nada?
I am that would be a no.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, I was going to bring you a pile of biochar, but I guess not.
I can barely keep up with the flowers in my vase.
Okay.
I have an excuse. My father was my father owned tons of cactuses in a small condominium on the third floor of a condominium business building. We could barely go from one place, from one room to another from his cactuses because they're supposedly easy to maintain and grow. And I decided okay, I'm going to have cactuses, and I kill them all within 2 weeks. Probably I water them too much. Not my thing. Since early 13 years old, I played basketball. I was barely at home. But thank you. I feel like I already received the gift from
Don't worry. Another great part about Sonoma is that we're living in a giant garden, so you don't have to tend it.
Yes. Somebody else is gardening, and that's another thing of blue zones. People in these spots in the world, they garden and they grow their own food. They are together on Friday evenings. I feel we have a blue zone here in Sonoma.
I think you're right. I think you're right. You know
They're
what
just.
I remember hearing about the blue zone? Someone was trying to, analyze the diet or whatever, and someone from one of those Greek islands was in attendance, one of those Greek islands that is a blue zone, and he said, "You're missing the point. In the morning, when we ask about dinner last night, we don't ask what did you eat? We ask who did you eat it with?"
That's another thing. If a 99 years old grandpa passes away, then nobody's leaving the wife alone. She's included or together all the time. We
Yeah.
could pass for a blue zone.
I
Yes.
think so. I think so.
Oh, thank you so much for chatting with me,
Of
taking this.
course, Nada.
Thank you so much for being a guest of Sonoma Voices.
Thank you for inviting me. This was a pleasure.
Yes, thank you for sharing with us such a unique thing that you do for living and improving the planet and having such a good time doing it. And I can tell you are excited and passionate about what you do.
That's right. That's
Thank you.
just fun. Thank you, Nada.
Finally, being outdoors,
That's right.
out of the lab. Thank you. I'm curious, and I will be seeing you in yoga classes about how how many more vineyards are reaching out and how you're expanding your business. I'm so proud of you.
Thanks, Nada.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Sonoma Voices. We hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. If you want to know more about our beautiful Sonoma, please email me at annrothbart@yahoo.com. And remember to follow the podcast to keep updated when we release new exciting voices.